Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person, contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 596, Ask Farnoosh with special co-host Mandy Woodruff.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Welcome to So Money, everyone. It's Friday, July 7th, my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. Welcome to the show. It's Friday, so we're going to take some time now to turn the tables, make you the star, answer your money questions, and you've got a lot of them, and some of you have actually voiced in your questions this week. Thank you for using SpeakPipe. I love this little tool. It's not super high tech, but it's working. People are able to leave their questions on the go. I hear you guys like on a treadmill sometimes, driving, multitasking, leaving your questions. It's fun to kind of get a sense of, you know, who my listeners are through their environments and hearing them on the go. So thanks to everybody who's been doing that using SpeakPipe. But of course, if you don't want to use the audio recorder, you can just type it in. Go to somoneypodcast.com, click on Ask Farnoosh and type away. This week, I'm bringing back a guest on So Money who's also a former colleague and also a friend. We have Mandy Woodruff with us. Mandy, welcome.
Hey, Noosh. It's so good to be back on.
You hear that? Thanks. She called me Noosh. Me. So we're really friends. This is like a legit
friendship. Yeah, I know her real well. I'm in the Noosh zone.
It's legit. It's real. Mandy, how are you? Congratulations on your recent wedding. I haven't talked to you in a while. What's up, girlfriend?
Good. Well, you know, it's like the post-wedding budget recovery. So that means I don't have a social life for like the next few months. No, I'm good. I'm just like getting back in a groove. We had an amazing honeymoon and sort of getting back to business as usual.
So you're really not doing much. Is this really like reeling in from the wedding expenses? Was it that much of a budget killer?
Actually, no, I was really proud. No, I mean, we paid for everything cash and everything was sort of paid off. What really killed me is the honeymoon. I didn't put as much work. I think after all of the wedding planning and like being so meticulous, I was like, just get the hotel. Like, I don't want to shop around. And we did 16 days in Europe. We did Italy and Barcelona.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's a lot of days. And I think my eyes were bigger than my pocketbook in that case. Like we booked this whole trip and I think we definitely spent more than I would have wanted to, but I mean, I think it was worth it. It was an amazing experience, but just having come back from that, it's sort of like, okay, let's just chill out for a minute. And also like, I don't know about you, but I don't know, people don't really talk about, or at least I haven't heard people talk about this in their 30s, but the more the friends around us start having like kids and getting married, and I know we're just got married too, like no one hangs out anymore. And so like financially and then just naturally, like I've just sort of been like, you know, focusing on work and like not socializing as much, but I'm like, man, it's so hard to like get your friends together now.
It's hard.
No one responds. It's sad. I'm like, do I need to have, basically my social calendar is like baby birthdays, baby baptisms, baby showers.
We have a different, I mean, you go through these phases. And when my husband and I got married and we moved to our current home. We live in an apartment building in Brooklyn, and it seemed like there were two types of people who not only socialize, but like you don't even like even just saying hello to one another in an elevator. The parents were in one camp, and then everybody else was in another camp, and you weren't allowed to say hello to parents until you had your own kids. Like it was that much of a divide. We felt like once we became a family and had kids, then we could suddenly have friends in the building and be accepted.
You're socially. Like in the club now.
Yeah. I think what it is now that I'm a parent, I feel like time is limited, as it's always limited. Everyone has the same amount of time. But when you are a parent, when you have a chance to not be parenting, and those days are few and farther in between, usually you have to pay for childcare and if you want to go out. And so you have to be really careful and purposeful in how you spend your time away from home. And like tonight, my husband and I are going to go see Hamilton.
So tonight? Oh my God.
Yes. Have you seen it?
Oh yeah. I got it for my husband's birthday last year, but I bought tickets like 8 months in advance.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Oh, people love it. There's not one person that doesn't like this show.
It's like the only, and I go to a lot of Broadway shows. It lives up to the hype. I can't overhype it because it's going to be as good as the hype is warranted.
Oh gosh, I'm so excited. So yeah, this is our one big outing. It's our combination wedding anniversary gift, my Valentine's Day gift, like all these gifts wrapped in one. We have to get like all this childcare for the day and for the night. And guess what? We're not going out for the next 6 weeks. That's probably what's going to end up happening. Or the whole summer. We'll see, depending on how dinner goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get it. I think I've learned how to like know my limitations as like a childless friend to all my friends who have babies now, you know, and I know when I know my place basically, and when not to sort of chime in and when to understand when they don't have babies. But I think when they have babies to worry about, but I think it's like, it's just, you know, it's natural, but it's also, you do sort of feel that shift and you're like, okay, things are different. Mm-hmm. I guess you have to wait a few years till like the kids can take care of themselves and then, you know, everyone can sort of be out more.
I don't know about you, but I also feel like my friend circle got smaller when I entered my 30s, not just because I got married and had kids, but because I feel like you collect a lot of friends in your 20s. It's your time to be social and you kind of have the friends that you don't love, but they're fun to go out with. And then life gets more serious and more settled and time is super valuable. You really start to differentiate and figure out who your real friends are, who you would rather not spend time with. And it works itself out sometimes that way. Hopefully,
definitely.
You don't have to ghost anyone, although I have done that.
Oh, that's my least favorite thing people do. I hate flaking. No, I've absolutely done that. My problem is that my husband has as many great friends as I do, and it's really annoying because that means it's harder because there's so many more people in our social circle than before. And I mean, I got lucky in that sense. I think it's great. I mean, he has such a great support system, but yeah, it's a pro and a con sometimes,
yes,
especially
yes.
Around wedding season. 7 weddings this year.
All right. Whoa.
I have a whole wedding budget
spun around. 7 weddings.
Yeah.
I don't even want to go there.
Let's... 2 of them are going to be international.
Oh no. I mean, great, but oh no.
Yeah. That's my travel now. Weddings and baby
oh,
stuff.
Lord.
Yeah.
I'm glad I never had
this
that many
30.
Friends to go to 7 weddings in 1 year. I was never that popular.
I should have shed them sooner.
Yeah, man. Ghost it. Where were we? Let's go to our questions. We have 3 SpeakPipe audio questions in a row. The first is from David from Denver, Colorado. Let's listen to David.
Hey, Farnoosh. My name is David. I'm from Denver, Colorado. I had a question for you actually about paying off debt. I wanted to see what the break-even point is for using a no-interest balance transfer on a credit card. For example, if you carry a student loan at 7% and you want to take a no interest balance transfer and you pay 3% up front, I was curious if you can walk us through maybe the math you would use to calculate how the interest rates are similar or if one is a better deal than the other. So, for example, I imagine if you pay 3% up front, it's probably equal to paying something like 3.something% at the end of the year or as an annual percentage. So I didn't know if you would have some time to be able to explain that to people so they can tell when it makes sense to take a balance transfer to pay off a credit card or not. So anyway, big fan of the podcast and thank you very much. And while I have you, I also heard you mention that you were interested in having people on to co-host an episode with you. And I would really like to do that. I'm working on my CPA license right now. I did one other podcast, The Successful Side Gig, and I really enjoyed it. So I thought maybe you might still be looking for somebody. So thank you very much and talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Well, David, follow up with me as far as co-hosting. I would love to learn more about you. Email me, farnoosh@farnoosh.tv. Tell me a little bit more about yourself, why you'd like to co-host. And I open this to everybody. I'm starting to have co-hosts every Friday. Mandy obviously is my latest co-host, but I love picking from the authentic listener who we've never met. We don't know each other. We're not friends, but you love the show and you'd like to test the co-hosting waters and come on the show with me. And if you love money, even better. His question, Mandy, I mean, he's really giving us some homework here, right? And just quickly, I did follow up with David to get some more numbers out of him. I wanted to know a little bit more about the situation. He mentioned, Manny, that this is a 5-year personal loan that he's dealing with currently, and he's interested in a 2-year balance transfer offer. And that transfer offer, as he said, carries a 3% upfront fee. Did happen to do some math because I knew this question was coming at us. Did you do any math?
Of course I did. Yeah.
Of course you did.
Magnify Money, we have a, well, I stole our own.
Oh, right. So everybody, Mandy works at Magnify Money, which tell us about Magnify Money.
Yeah. I'm the executive editor for Magnify Money. It's a personal finance startup. It's been around for a few years now. And basically it's one of the best destinations if you're shopping for credit cards or personal loans and you want to find out where are the best rates. What are the best options for me? What are the pros and cons? That is how Magnify Money started. I came on last year to bring in journalism and start doing more personal finance news and coverage, which has been really fun. But one of my favorite things that we have are these tools and these calculators. So I definitely tapped our personal loan calculator for David's question for sure.
So what did you find? I did some math, but I'm curious, since I'm not a robot, you have the robots at Magnify Money. You have the calculators. What did the robots find out?
Yeah, we're really testing our systems here. So he's asking about balance transfers, which I'm really excited about because actually my husband, he just did a balance transfer he was about to his this zero interest rate on this furniture card that he's had pre-Mandy, dating or being with like a personal finance reporter. And it was the introductory rate was going to be over and he was like, where are some 0% balance transfer options for me? So this is all fresh for me. And one of the first things he asked about, just like David, is how do I figure out if it's a good deal when I'm going to get charged a percentage upfront, which many, many balance transfer options do. And so for him, he's asking about 3%. So right off the bat on a $12,000 loan, if that's the balance, that's $360 he's going to get charged off the bat if he takes a balance transfer offer that comes with a fee. I don't know if you know this though, but there are some balance transfer offers that have no fees. And that's where I would say, that's the first place. That's the first thing I'd recommend to David is look for a balance transfer offer that does not charge you that nasty 3%, 5% upfront fee. And I actually know a really good one. This is the one my husband used. It's the Barclaycard Ring MasterCard. It is 0% for 15 months and no fees. No balance transfer fees, and it's awesome. The only quid pro quo is that you need to have pretty good credit, like over a 720 to qualify. But that's probably if not the best balance transfer option on the market right now.
I agree. I also like Chase Slate's card. I work with Chase Slate, so that is a shameless plug, but truly,
yeah,
they're great too. They're one of the gold standards in this category because of the no fee. But you usually do need, like you said, really good credit. And also you sometimes have to make the transfer within a window in order to qualify mm-hmm. for the no fee. So just read the fine print. So you're right, Mandy, $360 upfront if he goes with this zero interest balance transfer. The thing is, he's asking about like a break-even point, at which point, you know, if he were to start paying interest, at what point is he basically paying as much interest on the 0% balance transfer than his current loan? Here's the thing, David, If you're going to do this, imagine that you have a 2-year clock deadline. Your plan is not to continue using this card after the 2-year period where you're getting 0% interest, because after that, likely the interest rate will jump to whatever the current market rate is. Like it could be 15, 16%, sometimes higher. And you want to be able to get out of this debt, right? Get out of this loan. And so take advantage of this 2-year period where you're paying no interest. Yes, it's going to cost $360 to do it, but I looked at how much interest he's paying if he sticks with the current loan. Did your calculators get this? $2,256 in interest.
That's exactly what I got too. Yeah.
Bingo.
So right off the bat, we know that he's potentially saving close to $2,000 by going with the balance transfer rather than sticking with this other loan.
The caveat is his monthly payment's going to go up, right? It's going to go up to like $500 a month on this 0% balance transfer if he does want to pay enough so that he's done in 2 years.
Yeah. And I feel like if you're going to do a balance transfer, that's got to be the goal. And I think a lot of people who do balance transfers, they sort of see them as a band-aid and, okay, I just want to like get this off my back for 15, 18 months. And they do it and it feels great. And they have this sense of like, yes, I'm free, but you're not really free. You're just sort of swapping out one debt for another debt. And we get tons of questions like, you know, this balance transfer is about to expire. I haven't finished paying it off. What's going to happen? And you're right. If you don't pay it off within that time, you're kind of going to be back to square one because you're going to get start getting charged that super high interest rate.
Right. So if he's already qualified for this card, I'd say go for it, David, because again, they don't usually take people with bad credit. If you've gotten accepted, that means you've got good credit. And I'd really love to see you debt-free in 2 years. And yeah, I would love to have you co-host with me. Just, you know, email me. Let me know a little bit more about yourself. That's farnoosh@farnoosh.tv. All right, Mandy, thanks for your calculators there. And
many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
Let's move on to Ray. She's a 47-year-old female who has some questions about saving money. She's got a goal to buy a home one day. Let's hear her out.
Hi, my name is Ray. I'm a 47-year-old African-American female with only $40,000 in a pre-tax retirement account. I do have a frozen pension, but because those aren't guaranteed, I don't consider that when I look at overall net worth. I'm investing 15% into retirement. I earn $60,000 a year, give or take. And I do have an employer match, but that's not part of the 15%. I currently owe $25,000 on a vehicle with no other debt. My concern right now is I only have $1,200 in cash in a savings account, and I don't have enough money or any money for a down payment on a home. I don't own a home, as you can tell from my last statement, and I'm trying to figure out what the next step should be. I'm not sure if you're aware, but the average African-American household only has a net worth of $12,000, and I want to break that cycle. Should I be focusing on increasing my emergency fund to maybe 6 to 12 months? But if I do that, that means I can't afford to also focus on putting money aside for a home. Or would you just focus on paying off the vehicle debt? Any suggestions or guidance would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
All right. I don't know, Mandy. It sounds like she really needs to build up that emergency savings before anything else happens.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of the pickle I feel like a lot of prospective homeowners are in. Like, you feel like you kind of have some money set aside, but you have all these crazy big goals and you're not sure where to start. One thing I immediately did when I heard her question is think about her debt to income ratio, because when you are thinking about applying for a mortgage, that's the first thing a lender is going to look at. I mean, that is the number to beat all numbers, because it's going to tell them whether or not you can qualify for most mortgages. Like, you know about the DTI, right? You guys bought a house.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is basically debt to income ratio. Just tell the lender, so this is how much debt you have each month that you have to pay off, and here's how much income you have. And in most cases, it has to be under 43% for most mortgages. It can vary by 1 or 2 points.
Which is actually quite high, I think, to be qualifying for a mortgage. But that's just my 2 cents. I think banks can actually be a little too lax.
Generous.
Yeah. I mean, when you get pre-qualified, they're like, you qualify for all this money. And you're like, but you know, I have to pay that back, right? Like, that's not something that I actually want to do. Still, it's in 2017, I think banks are over lending. But anyway, that's another conversation. But you're right. I think that in order to present yourself as a stellar borrower, especially for a mortgage, you want to have great credit. You want to make sure that you have a nice savings cushion that's on top of the down payment that you're going to bring to the close. So take this time to really, really beef up your cash reserves. And I think saving 15% into retirement's pretty good. I think that's, if you just keep status quo.
That's amazing,
there,
actually. That's amazing. 15%. I mean, that's like,
that's,
I think,
above
triple
average.
What most,
yeah,
people typically spend. You know, some mortgages, I actually reached out to a loan officer who does some writing for us, and some mortgages require a couple of months cash reserves anyway. So, I mean, you want to go into a lender's office already having money in the bank, in a cash reserve fund. And so I don't know, I feel like saving for a down payment at the same time you're saving for your emergency savings. What I do, because we're saving for a house too, is, so I have a separate savings account. I have my Ally account, and then I just open up another savings account under Ally, and I am contributing to both at the same time. Luckily, we've sort of hit the 12-month mark for our savings, so now we've sort of put everything we were putting into that account into our down payment account now, which has been, for me, it was good to actually put a label on it, and then sort of set up automatic savings so I wasn't forgetting about it and using that money for, you know, more Hamilton tickets or anything.
Well, you actually segued us quite nicely to our next question from Nicole. She has a question, and we'll listen to her in a second, about how to compartmentalize her money, and is there a way to overdo it? So let's listen to her question.
Hey, Pranoosh. So my question is about managing money. I am a super micromanager. I love to, secretly love to rearrange all my money whenever I get it. I have 3 different banks I use with 7 different accounts in total, where I put money for savings and vacation and frequent bills, long-term wants. And I even have a bank account for my dog. And whenever I tell anyone about this, especially the dog part, that I have a bank account for my dog, everyone laughs. But I just wanted to get your take on what you think about managing money, if you think I'm getting too into it, or if you have any other tips, and look forward to hearing your advice.
All right. 7 different accounts. You just finished talking about, Mandy, how you have an account within an account. I think there's something to be said about being able to visualize all the different ways you are managing your money, having a bucket for this, a bucket for that. But at some point, does it become a little overwhelming? I think that's really what she's asking here. Is there a way to streamline this and but still, you know, still end up with saving as much as possible?
This was totally me 2 years ago. I had 7 savings accounts. I was like crazy about it. And I used to,
wait,
I was
7
very
bank
like
accounts
evangelical.
Across all different banks, or?
I had 7 savings accounts. There were 3 at Cap. There were several at Capital One 360, and then I had a couple at Ally, and then I had my like Chase account. I was all over the place. I still kind of am, but I've shifted to where just having 2 savings accounts at Ally, because for me it just, I don't know, I just at that time of my life I needed to watch every penny, and I wanted to have a super specific savings accounts for different goals and things, and it was good for me then. You know, I had time to like manage it, and I enjoyed it. It sounds like she enjoys it too. I was like really nerdy about it. But at this point in my life, it just doesn't really, it's not working anymore. You know, I merged finances partially with my husband now, and there's just a lot going on. So for us, it was easier just to put everything in one bucket. So now we share our Ally accounts for emergency savings and the down payment savings account. So for me, it's really just, if this time in your life, it works for you to have 7 accounts, like whatever works for you. But I think most people will just get maybe burned out and just want to simplify things, which is what happened to me.
Yeah, this is a really personal question. And so if it works for you, Nicole, and you're not feeling this is cumbersome or hard to track, if this is working for you, it's working for you. And congrats on finding something that works for you. There's no rule that says that having 7 different accounts across 3 banks is bad. The only time I would say that's not a great idea is if you are someone who is not organized, kind of is forgetful, is a little all over the place. And so you might not track your money that wisely, but also maybe there's a bank in there that's charging you a lot in fees. Could you get rid of that bank and maybe substitute with a different bank that's more fee friendly? So if you feel that this is working for you and is helping you save better and more, then stick with the program. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And then as your life transitions and as your goals change, maybe you find you don't need as many accounts and you can switch it up after that. All right. Good advice, Mandy. Ken, we just finished talking about real estate. He and his wife are also looking to buy a home in the next few months, but he says his wife is about to reduce her work schedule from full-time to 3 days per week. And she's staying with the same employer and she'll still be getting paid, but it's for a smaller amount. So he wants to know, will lenders look at this as kind of unstable employment and therefore not count any of her earnings towards their eligibility? So can I just say, because I've bought property a few times now and I've done it mostly as a freelancer, and talk about unstable employment, the most important thing when you have someone applying for a mortgage who doesn't have, say, a super consistent paycheck, a consistent track record of employment, is that you have your tax returns from the last, I would say, 3 years, whereas typical borrowers with, you know, average jobs may be asked to only have the last 2 years of tax returns. Your wife may be required to have 3 years of tax return. She may also want to ask her employer ahead of time, get proactive, ask the employer, her boss, HR, to write a letter that says that even though her work schedule has been reduced, you know, she's a valuable employee, we love working with her, and, you know, basically write like a kind of a letter of recommendation. And, but like we talked earlier, most important is that you have savings, that you have good credit, and that you have a job too. If you have a job and she has a job, even though she's making a little bit less, but you're not trying to overborrow, I think that that will all go into consideration and hopefully work in your favor. What do you think, Mandy? You cover real estate a lot, or have covered real estate a lot in your work as a financial reporter.
I do, yeah. Actually, this is another question I ran by my favorite real estate guy who writes for us. And he's a loan officer by day. This is his day job. And he says that they do consider part-time income as long as, just like you said, Noosh, as long as they have pay stubs and even a letter from an employer talking about the average hours that they work and their hourly rate. And she should be good to go. He actually seemed like it wasn't really anything to worry about. Also, sometimes I've read before that lenders or loan officers will look at an average of your income over the last 2 to 3 years. And if she was working full time prior to this change, this recent change, then I think she should be in good shape. And just like if her husband is earning an income too, then I don't see any reasons why they would have any problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if she's not working and you want to borrow and co-borrow and it's a loan amount that's maybe a little more than you can handle, given the instability, that's another situation. But I don't think this is anything to be really insecure about. All right, last but not least, we have a question from Regina, and I really love this question, but I'll let you tell us what it is, Mandy.
Okay. So Regina has a question that I think a lot of people have these days, which is what the heck are these things called index funds? And what is the best way to go about investing in them? And is there any way to avoid fees? I think people, it takes, 4 to 5 years before these big, nasty, personal finance topics really start to sink in with people. And I feel like I've been writing about index funds for ever since the recession, as a safe, broad, way to diversify your investments and get into the market. And so it's really exciting for me because I'm getting a lot of questions from people about who are interested in finally figuring out what index funds are and interested enough to maybe change the way that they're saving and investing to incorporate more of them. I love index funds. The easiest, I'm just going to speak from personal experience, the way that I invest in index funds, because I've always had regular jobs with regular incomes working for companies that I have a 401k. So I've set up a target date fund. I've invested through Vanguard into a target date fund, which is essentially a set it and forget it type of investment account. It's tied to the year that you retire, and they essentially make your investments a little bit more conservative the older you get, the closer you get to retirement. So I'm 29 and mine is 20. I'm in the target date fund tied to 2055. So as I get older and if I continue to invest in this target date fund, they're going to automatically shift my investments for me. And they're also really low fee. I'm pretty sure my expense ratio, and that just means that's the cost of what it costs for them to manage your investment for you. I'm pretty sure mine is 0.12% or something, which is good. I think, isn't it most people say sort of under 1% is the place you want to be.
Yes.
So there definitely are low fee options out there. Vanguard is what I invest through. But other brokerages have target date funds or index fund portfolios too, like Fidelity, Charles Schwab is another good one.
And also the robo advisors, Betterment,
yeah,
Wealthfront, exactly. Elevest, Charles Schwab has a robo, sort of an automated investment platform. People don't like the word robo. People in the industry don't like the word robo. So I'll spare that. But
it's efficient. I dig it.
Yeah. And so it's efficient and it's low fee. The caveat being that you don't really get to talk to anybody about your investments as you may with a financial planner. But in that case, obviously you're paying more, but they specialize in exchange traded funds, index funds. So you're paying a lot less per investment than you would maybe anywhere else where you might be convinced to, bulk up your portfolio with all these other different kinds of actively invested funds. And by the way, now that the fiduciary rule is being phased in, anyone who gives you advice regarding your retirement plan, whether that's a CFP, they've always been governed by the fiduciary rule, or anybody else, they have to always put your best interest first. Meaning they have to present you with options for retirement, investment options, investment products that are
not just suitable, but actually are results driven, are not expensive. They're not making crazy, crazy kickbacks and commissions. They can still make a commission, but they have to disclose it to you. So now you have a more sense of like, should I really go this route? But that said, you should still do your due diligence and ask if you're going to go through a planner or some, even just through your 401k at work, if they're making recommendations for you, you should ask them, what are the fees? How do you get paid? Don't take it for granted. Just a little public service announcement, because it is pretty recent that this fiduciary rule has like started to really make its way into the industry. And by January, hopefully everybody is adhering to this rule.
Yeah, this is major because I don't know if you've ever been in a position where you've left a job and you're ready to roll over your IRA to a new one, or you're retiring. And that's where the DOL, the fiduciary rule, really comes into play, because people who retire, this is, you know, the financial industry, this is a huge opportunity for them, because they're like, oh, great, these people are going to want to transfer their IRA over to potentially our account. So that's sort of the opportunity that they have, is to stick you with funds that, you know, like you said, give them the best reward and may not be best for you. So I'm really excited that this rule, you know, cross, fingers crossed that nothing's going to happen before January, and it moves ahead full steam ahead. I'm excited for that. But one thing I'll say is, Regina, I don't know, she doesn't mention how old she is, but if she's wondering about index funds and wants to start investing, and she doesn't say if she wants to invest for retirement or not, or what her goal is, but just start as early as possible and you'll be surprised. I mean, I had one of my accounts from my first job in New York. I actually kind of left it where it was because I didn't roll it over. I finally did this year, 7 years later. But this year we had a great market, and I, without even touching it or doing nothing, I've gained $6,000 this year.
Whoa.
Just because it was sitting in an account that I opened when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And that was just opening a target date fund, getting those index funds, and like setting it and forgetting it.
Mandy, it's been so fun geeking out with you over money. Thanks for coming on our show, and tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on. Always nice. And my podcast is called Brown Ambition. It comes on iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcast. It's called Brown Ambition again. It's a conversation between me and my best money friend, Tiffany, the budgetista Alice. And it's like an irreverent take. It's two girls, two women talking about finance and career. This week we had an amazing guest who, you know, Lynette Calfani-Cox, our favorite, the money coach.
Love her.
Came on and we talked about real salary negotiation tips, like no BS. What are some actionable ways you can negotiate? And then Lynette shared a story about her daughter and how her daughter lost a $50,000 college scholarship, and the really brilliant way that her and her husband decided to deal with that. So we like to have fun guests on and answer people's questions about money and finance. And again, it comes on every Tuesday on iTunes, or you can check us out at brownambitionpodcast.com.
Love it. Congrats to you on that show. I remember when you launched it, and it's come a very long way. And I'm a big fan of Tiffany, who's also been a guest on this show, and Lynette's been on this show. Really excited for you guys. And how do you like podcasting? Do you think it's going to be something that's going to be around for a while, at least your involvement? I mean,
we started this podcast 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years officially in September, as just a fun, just something fun and like a fun way to connect with other people like us who want, you know, a fun way to talk about money and career. And honestly, it's been so rewarding. We didn't go into it with any sort of expectations of how many people would download it or any expectations of making money off of it. And I still haven't even monetized it, even though I, you know, keep saying I'm going to look into it. But for me, it's really just enjoyable. And I think because I'm not in it for the money, it's been fun for me. And, you know, I edit it and I produce it myself. We don't have people helping out. I've kept it really simple. So for me, it's not that huge of a time suck, you know, but we only have one episode a week. So I'm going to keep doing it as long as we and our listeners keep growing. I mean, I think we're up to, I don't know, this is probably going to sound so small to you, but up to 50,000 downloads now, every month. And that's a huge growth from
that's
what
huge.
We had even last year. No, we're trying, but for such like a low.
You publish once a week? That's
once a week. Yeah,
that's a lot of people. That's like over 13, what is it, 12,000 people, 12,500 people listening every episode. That's phenomenal. Every month, that's no, you're doing very well.
I'm really proud of it. So for me, it's fun. It's like a side, it's like a hobby. And, you know, I think the hard part is when you really try and make money off of it. And that's where it can get like maybe not as, I don't know, difficult or I don't know. You tell
definitely
me. I'm
sponsor ready. I think you're ready to make some sponsorship money if you haven't already.
No, we just started. We had a powwow a couple of weeks ago to start talking about that. So if you have any advice, I'm all ears. Maybe
we'll do after like, hours. So many conversation with you on that. Yeah, I think you're ready. I think that's a very strong following, and I'm sure your audience loves you a lot, and there's a lot of engagement. So that's important. And I would start with this. I would start by measuring your audience, sending them a survey, and just asking them about who they are, what their interests are, how often they listen, how much they make, where they live. Just get to know your audience, because ultimately when you work with sponsors, they're going to want to know really who's the audience. And you probably already have a sense, but to really know definitively based on getting back like 100 or 200 survey questionnaires.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah. I mean, I have a good guess. Our audiences, they're so vocal and so responsive, and they email us all the time. And it's, I don't know, it feels really intimate, and like we have a really good loyal following, which I love. And I don't want to like jeopardize that or tweak or like fiddle with the format of the show too much. But honestly, if we make money off of it, all I want is just to hire someone else to like edit it and do all the nitty gritty stuff so I can have my Monday nights back, you know?
I think podcast listeners by now understand that, you know, it's this labor of love. They're getting all this amazing content for free, right guys, right gals, right? This amazing content for free. If you need to slip in a 30-second ad and you're not charging your listener, I mean, you have to be able to do this and make it work for you. And if that's what it's going to take, then I think that's allowed. I think that's, you know, something that your listeners will reconcile with and maybe even appreciate, because it's a sign that you're growing, you know, and they helped you get to this place.
Yeah. Legitimizes a little bit. You know, some people are actually raising money themselves, like just putting up donations.
You could do a Kickstarter. You could just ask your listeners to donate $1. If all your listeners gave $1, I think that could be enough to help you get an editor.
But yeah, I'm really happy with the, and kudos to you too. I'm like so excited to see So Money continue blowing up. And
this is why I have you on the show. That's why I have co-hosts now on Fridays. I want to try to just take it to the next level a little bit. I'd love to have a So Money series on the web where we actually do video. But you know, I'm one person, and if anybody out there has a bigger plans for me and wants to help me lift me out of my little WeWork office here, or sometimes my bedroom when I podcast, I'd love to go and do this on a bigger stage and just, you know, get it out there. I think these conversations are so important, you know, and just like the conversations you have on your podcast. So we'll see.
Yeah. Live shows.
Tours. All right, Mandy, thank you so much. I feel like we forgot that we were still recording.
Oh, you guys
are
still there? Okay.
Still there. Thank you so much. Wishing you all the best. Hope we don't go so long without reconnecting, but you know, you got married, I had a baby, life happens.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to reconnect, and anytime, have me back anytime.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs.
Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.